What's going on, guys? I'm super excited to announce that we are doing our first podcast today. Welcome to the 10-Year Blue Belt Podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Ryan White. We're going to be highlighting the UFC 250 card that's coming up Saturday this weekend. What's going on, Ryan? How are you?
I am doing great. How are you today, Brent?
I'm good, bro. Super excited to get the show on the road.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So pretty much what we're going to do for you is we're going to highlight a couple undercard fights. We'll go through the main card, and then we're going to touch base on a couple of other topics going on in the MMA world. So first fight coming up of the night, I think it's a super interesting fight. Personally, just because the last main event we just had in the UFC was his older brother.
Gilbert Burns is coming off a super impressive victory against Tyron Woodley last weekend.
Herbert Burns versus Evan Dunham at a catchweight of 150 pounds. What do you think about the fight, Ryan?
So I think it's interesting that it's at 150. I would like to kind of know the rationale for that. You know, Evan Dunham's definitely on the last legs of his career.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm sure you would like to definitely get one up on Herbert, but I mean, at this point, he's on a two-fight losing streak, and I'm having a tough time betting on him with this one. Even though I personally like him, if I were betting, I'd be putting it on Herbert.
I think it's super interesting also, his last fight is actually a TKO loss of Francisco Trinaldo, September 2018. So this guy's on a pretty long layoff. You got guys like Dominic Cruz coming off of 2 years, you know, beating TJ Dillashaw for the title. But then Evan Dunham at this stage in his career, and I don't really see him as that elite fighter that he used to be in the beginning, this exciting guy that's going to come in there and really mix it up with Herbert. I think Herbert's too much for him.
Agreed, and especially too, like, his last two losses were TKOs to the body, you know, and that's intensely rare. I'd be interested to know kind of what the issue is with that. But that seems like his durability is definitely in question now.
Yeah. Touching on the 150, I mean, Dunham's typically a 155er, so he's dropping down a little low. Herbert usually fights at 145. I think we're seeing a lot more catchweight fights since training camps are limited. There's not that ability to cut the weight anymore, but we saw what happened with Gilbert. Gilbert came in, made weight, absolutely put a beating on Tyron. I think Herbert's going to do the same. I think wherever the fight goes, he's going to either outstrike him, and if it's on the ground, I mean, Herbert finishes it. I give it to Herbert in 2 rounds.
Agreed.
Awesome. So on to the next fight. It's the main event of the prelims. We're going to be talking about Serres versus Chase Hooper. Chase is a pretty interesting guy, man. Chase Hooper is like Ben Askren's little son, you know, like little protege. I saw them have some back and forth on Twitter. Alex Caceres, of course, is just like a well-seasoned veteran of the sport right now. He's not quite elite, but we've seen some pretty impressive performances.
Yeah, I mean, he's always game, but I mean, you know, he's got a 500 record, Evan Dunham versus Herbert Burns, where it seems like, you know, they're taking the veteran and using it to put over Chase Hooper, which, I mean, granted, that's the name of the game. There's nothing wrong with that. Definitely, it's hard to bet on Caceres.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I honestly just think the youth is going to play a huge play. I mean, Chase Hooper is coming in. He's 20 years old. The guy's an absolute wrecking machine. He's got 14 fights already at 20 years old, 4 amateur and 10 pro.
Wow.
He's got a 9-1-0 record, so just one split draw back at Cage Fury Fightings in 2018. And I think when you see this guy on the ground, he's just going to absolutely mangle up Alex Caceres. I think the only way that Caceres could really win is by kind of making it a boring fight, staying on the feet, landing those long jabs.
I agree. And I mean, Caceres is tricky, but most of his fights, they're decisions. You know, he doesn't really have a lot of finishing ability. Honestly, to me, he's always seemed personally kind of weak. He doesn't have a ton of power. I remember him like going for submissions and stuff. I can't remember him actually getting any.
So, yeah, I mean, his last finish in the UFC was in January of 2014, rear naked choke of Sergio Pettis. And I mean, Sergio's a smaller guy fighting up at a higher weight class. I mean, absolutely. I just don't really see how Chase Hooper, a big young guy, I see him steamrolling Caceres in the first round. I think he really just takes him down, beats him up, and he's either going to TKO him or he's going to catch him in a submission.
Exactly. I mean, this is definitely a gatekeeping fight on Caceres' end. I think he's being set up to be part of Chase Hooper's highlight reel.
Absolutely, 100%. All right, moving on to the first fight of the main card. Pretty interesting matchup. We have Eddie Wineland versus Sean O'Malley. Eddie Wineland, veteran of the sport, former WEC champion. He also fought for the interim belt against Henan Barrow. Yeah, back in the days. That highlight reel spinning back kick. Sean O'Malley is coming off of a very impressive KO win of Jose Alberto Quinones at UFC 248, which actually wasn't too long ago. You think about it, it's only a couple of months. So
Yeah.
How do you feel about Sean O'Malley's his health? I mean, he's healthy now. He's off the ban.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to be doing, you know, a lot better and sort of trending in the right direction. I mean, and this is definitely meant to put him over because, like, Wineland is a gritty veteran who's been fought everybody and been around forever. But, you know, he's another one who his better days are long behind him. And I think he's just being set up here to beat up by Sean O'Malley.
Yeah, I mean, Sean's a very interesting martial artist in the sense that he didn't grow up in this. You came in as a wrestler. You learned some grappling. You sharpened your hands with some boxing. You made it to the UFC. He's from this generation of guys do everything. You know, they're just wrestling, jiu-jitsu, hands, and that's what they do all day, every day. There's none of this single discipline evolution that you're seeing with a guy like O'Malley. It's just his game's always getting sharper every time you see him fight.
Exactly. And when in doubt in situations like this, I'm going to bet on youth. You know, and Wineland has been coming off. It'll be just under a year. It's those June 8th, 2019. That's a bit of a layoff himself, and he's already getting up there. And so, I mean, I have a really hard time betting on Wineland on this one.
Yeah, I mean, if Wineland can get, you know, a little wild in it, a little kind of bully Sean O'Malley a little bit and try to use a bit of size, I can see maybe this fight going to a decision and Wineland could potentially edge it. But if Sean can really just do what he does best and keep the distance and work that left hand, work those kicks and avoid the ground, which from what I see is actually quite a seasoned jiu-jitsu guy at this stage in his career, I think he can really just get it done. I think I'm going to go Sean O'Malley within three.
Yep, me likewise.
Cool, guys. The fights, as of now, start to get a little trickier. We've got some really cool matchups. Neil Magny versus Anthony Rocco Martin. Neil Magny's coming off of a big win against Li Jing Lian at UFC 248. And Anthony Rocco Martin's coming off of a win in November of 2019. Unanimous decision in Moscow, Russia. I think Rocco's a dark horse in this fight, man. I think Rocco's got really good hands. He's got a really talented submission game. Yep. I think Magny's had a little bit of problems with really well-rounded guys.
I agree. I definitely think this is a more competitive fight than the other three. But I agree. I think Anthony Rocco Martin is definitely the dark horse here.
Yeah, my money's on Rocco. I think Rocco, I'm not going to say it's going to be a finish, but I think Rocco's going to beat him to the punch. He's going to be the quicker fighter. And I think if the fight does go to the ground, Rocco can handle himself tremendously. And we've never really seen anything that outstanding for Magny on the ground. I mean, we know he's a very well-rounded fighter. We know that wherever the fight goes, he'll be game. But I just think that Rocco edges him in a decision at the end of this. Next fight of the night, Aljamain Sterling versus Corey Sandhagen. This is pretty much, in my opinion, a number one contender fight. I mean, we've got, I think it's Peter Yan versus Jose Aldo is the talk of the town for the vacant 135 strap. I think that Marais is taking a step back at the moment. These are two really tough guys. I mean, Aljo's coming off of a big win against Pedro Munhoz, a fight that he dominated. He's on a 4-fight winning streak. And Corey Sandhagen's also on a 7-fight win streak, 4 at bantamweight. My opinion, I mean, I think a lot of guys don't understand how big and talented of a fighter Corey Sandhagen is. He's not really that big of a name at the moment. I mean, everyone knows who Aljamain Sterling is. Always has his name in the mix, but I think Corey Sandhagen's on the rise, man. This guy's a WKA world champion. He's got a seasoned ground game. I just don't see a lot of ways that Aljamain can beat him. I think on the ground, Aljo's slippery and tricky, but I don't really see any way that he's better than Corey Sandhagen at the moment.
I agree. I think Corey Sandhagen actually right now is one of my favorite fighters to watch. And he's definitely one of the prospects that the UFC is looking to build. I mean, Sterling has a tricky style, but I think his way to win would be to outpoint him. And I struggle to bet on people where I think their best way to win is by decision.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'd go with Sandhagen too.
I think Corey Sandhagen's just going to come in there. Mean gritty on the feet, he's going to beat him to the punch. And on the ground, he's also quite a slick fighter as well. So I'm picking Corey Sandhagen in this one.
Agreed. I think, Sandhagen just has like the seek and destroy style that is really fun to watch as a fan. And I just think it's going to be too much for Aljamain.
I actually think it's quite interesting that they put this fight below another 135 fight in Rafael Sunsao and Cody Garbrandt. That's actually the co-main event. I mean, both guys coming off of two losses.
Agreed. I think that's more, you know, Garbrandt is still a name, you know, but he is on a three fight losing streak and all of them by KO. And so, I mean, I know he had that Cinderella performance against Dominic Cruz, but his past few fights, he's fought the exact same and just is knocked out.
The sad thing with Cody is that we all know the kind of talent that he brings to the table, but you just never know what Cody's showing up to fight.
Exactly.
Rafael Sunsao, on the other hand, I mean, pretty composed guy. The only finish that we have so far in that two-fight losing streak is against Marlon Moraes. I think if Sunsao can keep the distance, be kind of elusive the way that he normally is and tries to take the fight down to the ground, he can coast by with a decision. But if Cody comes in on point, I also see a way that Cody can get in there and finish the fight. This fight's a toss-up for me.
I can see it going either way. I'm inclined to say Sunsao, but I can see Cody taking it as well.
Yeah, I agree. Really good take. And now, guys, we're on to the main event, Amanda Nunes versus Felicia Spencer. Felicia Spencer, she's 8-1 at the moment. Her last fight was a win in February 2020 by TKO. Amanda Nunes, of course, everyone knows, has just been absolutely fucking steamrolling everyone she fights. I don't see any way, I hate to take this take, I really want to try to see both sides, but I don't see any goddamn way possible that Felicia Spencer wins this fight. I think she's extremely one-dimensional. I think she's really just a grappler. We saw Chris Cyborg really just take it to her for three rounds, and we saw what Amanda Nunes did to Chris Cyborg. So if the MMA math adds up, I think that Nunes really takes her out in round one.
Easily put Spencer out, and I just don't think she can bully Amanda around. She would need to in order to, you know, get the points she needs to win that decision or to even get her to the ground, really.
Yeah, I think the power is a huge factor. I think Amanda is just absolutely super well-rounded. I mean, that fight against Jermaine Duranemi really showed that even if the things are going a little rough on the feet, she can take you down to the ground, beat you up. I kind of actually see this fight going like the Raquel Pennington fight. I think that Felicia is just going to feel a little lost. Nunes is just going to beat her up, and if she doesn't put her away in one, she's going to make it an absolutely super long night for Felicia Spencer. So I'm going with Amanda Nunes by TKO within five, no doubt about it.
Yeah, agreed. You know, I mean, and you know, like I said earlier, I don't like it when the only way I can envision somebody winning is by decision. And so I can't bet on Spencer in any way.
We're wrapping up all the fights for UFC 250 this Saturday. Tune in. They're going to be super, super good fights this weekend. Really exciting card. In other news in the MMA world, we wanted to talk to you guys about a couple of interesting topics. The first being Fight Island. I mean, the mystery of Fight Island. We've seen the merch. The t-shirts are out. Dana's talking about all the details little by little, slowly roping us into this illusion that is Fight Island. Do you think it's actually going to happen?
You know, I appreciate that Dana is trying to become Shang Tsung from Mortal Kombat, but, you know, and I mean, God, I guess I can see it, but at the end of the day, I just, especially now that a lot of the, you know, lockdown procedures are being lifted and a lot of the restrictions are going away, I don't see why it would be terribly feasible to stick with that when it probably won't be necessary. And honestly, I'm digging the fights in APEC so far.
I mean, it looks good. The APEC is looking great, especially for the atmosphere. I mean, it looks a lot better when you're not looking into an empty 20,000-person stadium, you know, where you can hear the echoes of the coaches in the background. So I'm really liking the APEC. It was interesting.
Me too. And so when you already have a good option in your own building, why go through the whole, you know, the whole song and dance of doing a private island? I would love to see it just for the sheer novelty of it. I just think it's pointless.
Yeah, a bit ridiculous at the moment, but Greg Hardy, man, he's talking about living on the island. He wants to fight on every car.
Greg Hardy's somebody who I'd be okay to ever see.
I'm just waiting for the fight where, I mean, I was super impressed in the Volkov fight where he really earned Volkov's respect on the feet, but I think if he fights against just one of these, like, big, scary, angry guys like Ngannou, just chin up in the air, throwing bombs at you. I could see him getting put away at some point. I'm sure most of us would enjoy it.
Well, Greg Hardy's somebody who lately has, you know, been trying to fight technically, but he lacks any technical ability.
Yeah.
You know, he's just like rigid and stiff. It's, you know, I mean, frankly, he's the most dangerous when he's the, you know, the big angry guy just stepping in, trying to put his hand through your face.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when he was kind of fighting these like 3-1, 3-2 guys up and coming to the UFC, you really see the difference in athleticism. But when it comes to actual like fighting technique, I think any guy that's really just like an established wrestler or has just seasoned hands can just absolutely put a beating on him. So, I mean, definitely. In that sense, I would love to see Fight Island just to see Greg Hardy get his ass kicked every weekend. So
that would be fun.
On another note, man, Colby Covington leaving ATT, man. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I think the writing's been on the wall for that for a long time. I mean, Colby seems to largely be doing a character. He's pretty much admitted that. But he also seems to have burned bridges everywhere. Sounds like he just hasn't been able to really play nice with anybody. And I think I heard something before about he like was screwing his coaches out of the money they deserved or something like that. And that's just not cool.
Yeah, he seems to be quite a character. I mean, you never truly know. I mean, we have guys like Chael who obviously put on that big front and they were the bad guy, but you knew he was playing a role because when he's losing, you know, Chael's he's a humble loser. He knows where he's lost and he gives his respect to his opponents where.
Well, and the Ultimate Fighter really outed Chael for being a good guy. You know, he can't be in character for 7 weeks or five weeks or how long it is. And I mean, and Colby is, you know, was one of Chael's guys. Like, they know each other very well. And I mean, I know Colby was on the cutting block for a little bit and then just decided that he needed to become interesting in order to get eyeballs on him. But like, you know, his character seems to be burning bridges with a lot of people. And I mean, and if he's sniffing people on money, that's just him being really shitty as a human.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even after the Kamaru Usman fight, like, I can see how Colby won a couple of those rounds, you know, just kind of outworking Usman, but I thought there was no freaking way that Colby was making it out of that fifth round. I mean, broken jaw, dropped once, he's getting caught clean, he's getting caught heavy. And even after that fight, I mean, I couldn't believe that he could still even talk, man. He was talking a lot of trash to Usman and saying that Mark Goddard had screwed him out of a title victory, you know, so.
I mean, yeah, Colby's a badass. I mean, I'm a fan of his as somebody who likes watching fights.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think good heels are hard to come by, and he is a good heel. But you know, that was a fight he was losing, and it's like Mark Goddard just maybe saved some years on his life.
We all saw it coming. I think Masvidal is like a real OG ATT guy. I can kind of actually see the management and the coaches leaning his way in this whole argument as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And off to the last topic of the conversation today, how do you feel about John Jones allegedly relinquishing his light heavyweight title?
I think at this point, John Jones is just going to do anything to make people want to pay attention to him. Because, I mean, the reality is his, you know, as much as I think he's probably the best fighter of all time, you know, he just can't get people to tune in for him. He's just not a draw. He wants money, but he doesn't understand that money has nothing to do with ability. Like for instance, like not only is Conor McGregor not the best fighter at 155, he arguably wasn't even at 145. He's never been the best in his division.
It's a good point. Arguably,
you know, because he never did fight Frankie Edgar. But the reason why he's able to command that much money is because when he talks, people listen, and when he fights, people tune in. You know, it's like he's a draw.
Yeah, I think Dana really said it the best when he's just very sad about what John Jones could have been, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
We've seen a lot of different versions of John Jones, you know, young and hungry John Jones, like the John Jones that prays to Jesus before the fight, comes out, knocks you out in two rounds. Then you got like bad boy John Jones that'll coast you out to a 5-round decision. You got social activist John Jones walking through the streets of Albuquerque, ripping cans of paint out of kids' hands. I mean, it's
like, though, granted, like with that situation, like he brought his own camera crew. And so you have to wonder, like, I mean, it, you know, I do think it takes something off of it when you're trying to make sure that people see you doing stuff. Like, for instance, like Chuck Liddell was doing the same thing in Huntington Beach. But, you know, he was picked up by TMZ. He didn't have his own camera. He didn't even have his phone going. He was just doing it because he thought it was the right thing to do. John Jones, on the other hand, wanted people to see him doing it. And to me, that takes something off.
I think he's being a bit of a diva right now. I mean, Dana said it. He's made a ton of money in his career. The UFC obviously treats the guy super well. Like, he's arguably, without the PED stuff and without some of the other very interesting controversies, if you were to just wipe his slate clean and just look at his record fight for fight, he is the GOAT.
Yeah.
In that sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to argue that when he has no real losses or anything like that. I would like to see him fight at heavyweight, and that would really clinch it for me. But, I think there's just any argument against him being the GOAT's kind of a weak, just because, like, not only has he won every fight he's been in, aside from the one DQ loss, it's like he's cleared out his division, multiple generations of his division.
Yeah, he's just fought legends on legends, tons of champs. I think it's honestly just the ploy for more money. I mean, I think at the end of the day, he comes back, he does fight. I don't think he relinquishes the belt. There's no other place in the world for John Jones to fight and get the type of money that he makes now than the UFC.
I mean, though granted, I suppose he could relinquish it and just go up to heavyweight. You know, it's like, because he would be relinquishing it.
That's another interesting take on it for sure. I mean, I think the Ngannou fight's super good matchup. I just really wish the UFC had actually made a little bit of an effort to make it. You know, I think in their eyes, it does look very appealing. But when you start talking about a $24 million payday, I mean, no crowd, no gate, no ticket sales. You're just relying on pay-per-view. I mean, the UFC is not going to be giving out paydays like that anytime soon.
Yeah. Well, and now, like, even Ngannou is saying that he wants more money too. And I agree, fighter pay is a consistent issue. But also too, when you have a 60-pound advantage on somebody, it's like, yeah, you don't need conditions for the fight.
Absolutely. Well, thanks very much, Ryan. I'm super happy we were able to get this done. Of course, guys, it might sound a little shaky at first, but as time goes on, the conversations will roll a little smoother. But thank you so much for tuning in, Ryan. How do you feel?
Oh, I feel good. I'm glad we got this first episode done.
Absolutely. All right, guys, just so you know, you can tune into the podcast on pretty much any podcasting media source that you have, whether it's Spotify, Anchor.fm, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the list goes on and on. Thanks a lot for listening, guys, and excited for you guys to tune in for the next one.